Hello and welcome to Travel Genius. I'm Mark Ill.
And I'm Nikki Eckstein. We're the Travel Geniuses.
Yes, we are. And we had so much fun last time we turned the show over to your voicemails. We have done it again. It is Listener Week Part 2.
Plus, we'll be joined by Jenna Yuan, who just wrapped a year-long odyssey around the world as the inaugural 52 Places traveler for the New York Times. That means she visited every place that the newspaper recommended as a must-see for 2018.
All that and more on this week's Travel Genius.
All right, we had so much fun the last time that we turned over the podcast to you, the listeners, and we've had so many more voicemails come in the interim. We just realized we had to do another episode full of your tips.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for all your calls and your tweets and your reviews.
You guys are amazing. So we've actually pulled another batch of your voicemails that caught our attention, things that we wanted to discuss. First up, Rick, who called us not once, but twice, and both times with genius tips.
I just called to let you know I agree with Mark regarding his comment on the carry-on bag having just two wheels. He's totally right. The four-wheeled bags with the spinners, they're not the way to go. Those wheels take up your valuable carry-on limit. Also, my hack is I just completed a trip around the world, and I didn't have a roaming plan on my phone. I just bought traveler SIM cards everywhere I went. So, for instance, I was in Singapore. I picked up a traveler SIM card at 7-Eleven, and it was, I think, 100 gigabit of data and talk time, and it actually worked in Australia as well and Malaysia. I just thought of another travel hack. As I say, I just completed a 3.5-week trip around the world with a carry-on bag, made it the whole way. Anyway, my trick is I took old underwear and socks, and as I went on my trip, I threw them out, made room for extra things.
All right, two questions, Rick. Where are you from? And what are the circumstances that led to that 3.5-week carry-on-only trip around the world?
I'm just going to be smug because Rick validated my two-wheel suitcase rule. It's something we're never going to come together on, is it, Nikki?
Mark, we're going to keep this debate going well into, like, season 15. If we ever get to season 15, I swear we're still going to be talking about this.
Team two-wheel, team two-wheel. I will say, the dirty clothes idea of taking old clothes and throwing them away, I think is absolutely brilliant. And I've heard of people doing that.
Yes, me
but
too.
I've never been bold enough. Have you tried it?
I've never done it. I'm a pack rat. My husband will listen to this and laugh. I have a really hard time getting rid of clothes in the first place. And I'm one of those people that likes textile recycling and so on and so forth. But I do know people who swear by this.
I will also say that I'm thrilled my new iPhone XS Max, whatever it's called, has two SIM card slots, because that is a bugbear for anyone who travels. That it was so hard to find a phone that you could swap in and out SIM cards. And I loved Rick's tip about making sure you buy a local SIM card if you're traveling, because it can transform your life.
I agree, and I've done that for years now, but I will say that technology is starting to evolve to a point where we might have a 2.0 version of this hack. Between Apple SIM and Google Fi, I think the technology is getting really good where you can have one SIM card that works almost universally. Not quite there yet.
They'll still find a way to charge us extra for it. It'll all sound great in paper.
Mark.
Am I the cynic? Okay.
Such a cynic.
Next up, we have Alex from Indianapolis.
One travel trip I've came across through spending several weeks on the road is just whenever I get into my hotel room, just immediately just double check, make sure the alarm is turned off. I feel like often, you know, guests will come in, set their personal alarm on the hotel clock there next to the bed, and I've unfortunately been woken up many times before my wake-up call, which is very frustrating. A second tip I'd have is most hotel rooms today come with a dirty laundry bag, like a plastic laundry bag that you can use, and I will always grab that, throw my dirty clothes in it, and then throw that bag in my suitcase, so that way my dirty clothes are in a separate bag.
I think both of these ideas are absolutely brilliant. What do you reckon, Nikki?
I think so, too. I mean, one of my most annoying hotel experiences was when I couldn't get an alarm clock to shut up at the Ritz Paris. Believe it or not.
Sacre bleu.
I know. And there was something going on with the circuit or something was weird, but I ended up having to unplug everything. And ever since then, Alex, I've been following your advice. That is totally on the money.
I always unplug hotel electronics of all kinds because I don't want music on when I come back into the room in case the maid has put on some refreshing but generic Kenny G. I also travel with a tiny alarm clock, a battery-operated analog alarm clock.
Do you really?
Because I want a backup to my phone. You never know. I overslept in London once because something went wrong with the network. And my phone's timing changed back to New York in the middle of the night.
That is weird. No,
maybe some listeners can explain how this would happen, because when I went to bed, it was one time. It was plugged in to the wall, no other device, and it auto-corrected back to the time zone it's usually on. So now I always travel with a little analog battery-operated alarm clock that no one can mess with.
Wow, how old school and foolproof. Love that.
I like to say I'm a bit of an OG.
Love that. And one final suggestion from Kate, who comes from Columbus, Ohio.
Something that I do when I travel is I always take snack-sized Ziploc bags and a Sharpie pen with me, and I like to get dirt or sand from wherever I've been. And then when I get home, I put it in one of those clear glass round Christmas balls, and then I use a paint pen to write on the Christmas bulb where I got it from. So I have like a bunch of Christmas ornaments from all kinds of places, like Angkor Wat in Cambodia, Notre Dame in Vietnam, like all kinds of really cool stuff, and it makes for a really interesting conversation when people come over and see my Christmas ornament.
Well, I'm impressed that anyone can be that organized and make this kind of effort, but I love seeing rituals around souvenir buying.
Oh, I do too. I think we all like giving a theme to things we buy so that we're basically creating a travel collection of some kind. I must say, Kate, I'd want to see it year round. I love that they're Christmas ornaments, but if I'm making that much effort, I'd want it on display year round.
Yes, I have a herd of elephants that I've collected from all around the world, and it is probably my most prized possession, collectively speaking.
I also got a great piece of advice about buying practical souvenirs, that we forget that you might need something for your house that's useful. Instead of buying it in your local Bed Bath & Beyond, why not buy it when you travel? You've done
this,
right?
Yeah, I've done that. I've bought pots and pans in Italy, actually. We found a store, I believe it was in Modena. It was kind of like a answer to Anthropology or something, and they had this amazing collection of pots and pans with removable handles that you could kind of mix and match, and it's still one of our favorite things, you know, all these years later.
And every time you cook with them,
you think about our trip. Absolutely.
Jinx. No, but that's the lovely thing about practical souvenirs, that you will use them and each use brings back some kind of memory.
Well, ever since we started doing that, we try to fill some kind of need in our home whenever we travel. So my husband got a new desk chair that's, you know, kind of an aluminum construction and needed a pad. So we bought that in Japan, a beautiful knit pad. We needed some new coffee mugs. We bought them in Sweden. And every time that we serve tea to our guests after a dinner party, they say, hey, these mugs are cool. Where'd you get them?
They're from Sweden. You know who didn't buy any souvenirs when she was traveling around the world? This week's guest, Jada Yuan, because she was on the road for almost an entire year. She spent 2 decades before that as an urban adventurer tackling red carpets and celebrity interviews, which is where I used to see her, before she ditched her job at New York Magazine to go on a year-long sabbatical with a difference. She was picked by the New York Times to be the paper's first ever 52 Places traveler, so that meant she'd visit each one of the places the Times designated as must-see spots for 2018.
She went everywhere, and I mean everywhere, from Pyeongchang, the home of the Winter Olympics, to Patagonia, where she got caught out and about in an epic 2-hour rainstorm. And she deliberately traveled on a regular budget to make sure that her experiences were easy enough for readers to replicate. That didn't stop her, though, from Airbnb-ing a yacht. More on that, obviously, coming up soon.
Airbnb-ing a yacht. I cannot wait to hear about this, so let's bring her in.
Jada, thank you so much for joining us, and welcome to Travel Genius.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Jada, let me ask you a question. You did spend a year traveling around the world. Was it how many weeks officially?
It was really more like 11 months. So I started in January, and then I ended mid-December.
Perfect.
End of January.
So before we start, I do have a bit of a procedural that you might want to know about.
Sure.
Can Nikki, I see your hand creeping towards the bell. Go on. That's our bell. What is the bell for, Nikki?
The bell is for genius points. So
Wait.
That's why you're here, Jada. We're hoping that you can give us some amazing technical prowess that you have gathered on your 11 months of travels to the 52 places. Mark, why don't
I'll
we
try
just
to do my best.
Yeah, let's dive in. Let's give you a running start.
Okay, so I want to know, you said that bus drivers are unlikely sources of insider information. Tell us about why people should always talk to bus drivers, because I think that's an amazing observation.
I mean, I feel like bus drivers really get you out of bad situations very often. I think you can just, you can appeal to a bus driver and say, it's nighttime, I'm a woman alone, I need some help. I overslept on a bus going from Venice to, I was going up to Bolzano, Italy, and I overslept and I looked outside and I, like, Austrian passport officials were coming through and I was like, what happened? and it turned out that I had overslept and gone into Austria.
Whoops.
And
we've all done that.
Yeah.
Well, it is easy to do in that region.
Yeah.
The streets just kind of crisscross, you know, between languages and borders and everything. So I could see how that could happen.
Yeah. And I think I was just sort of under some impression that the bus drivers knew where I was going. I was like the only person getting off in Bolzano. And I thought that they would wake me up, but that was not true. But they were very kind. And they were like, well, we don't know what to do, but we're gonna drop you off here. You'll be okay. And
did you make it back to Bolzano? Did the bus driver save you?
Yeah. It took me about 6 more hours.
Oh.
Hanging outside.
Worth it, though. That's one of my favorite places.
Not a
places.
Genius travel tip.
Well,
don't oversleep. Set alarms for yourself.
But you do describe yourself as a night owl, which is ironic considering that you fell asleep that particular story. But talk to us a little bit about how you managed your circadian rhythm and everything on these crazy trips. I know that you were bouncing around in ways that weren't necessarily just like circumnavigating the globe. So
yeah,
what were your strategies for, like, you know, dealing with jet lag and dealing with all the travel times and all that?
Well, so jet lag wasn't as much of an issue for me as it would be for other travelers, because I was on the Urfa Road and I was going in a pretty methodical way west to east around the world, which I think is maybe the wrong way you're supposed to go around the world. But probably like the biggest jet lag I had was going from Zambia to Australia, but that's not as long as it would be for someone else. And then coming back from Thailand to here, I think were the hard parts. And the only way I managed anything was just nap. I didn't follow any directions on like taking melatonin or taking sleeping pills or falling asleep. You know, I mean, you do the things like fall asleep, try to fall asleep at a bedtime, like 9 o'clock, if you can make it
right
to 9 o'clock, fall asleep at that. And also eat on the schedule of the place where you're going, not just try and sleep on the schedule of where you're going, but just like fall asleep when you're tired.
But you do talk a little bit about knowing your own internal rhythms and planning according to your rhythm, not kind of like forcing yourself,
yeah,
you know, to work with an airline schedule, but like finding the thing that you know is going to work for you.
Yeah, well, it's the only way to stay healthy on a trip as long as I had, which was just that, like, I don't do well if I have to force myself to wake up multiple times in a row to get to a 6 a.m. flight or a 6 a.m. train. I do better.
I'm a morning person. Nikki,
I'm not a morning person. I'm like you, Jada.
I'm on that 6 a.m. flight and I'm thrilled. Like, I'm happy. I'm the one person talking. So you're saying, while conventional travel wisdom says always take the first flight of the day, that's, you know, it won't be delayed. You're saying that actually if that doesn't work with your natural rhythm, don't listen to that advice.
Yeah, because I think that getting on that flight matters if you're a morning person or if you really have to be at the place at a particular time. And I had limited time in each destination, but it wasn't like if I was there 5 hours later than I thought I was going to be, that it was going to be this huge bad thing, and I wouldn't be able to get work done. I mean, I could just sit somewhere and do some work if I got delayed, or I could sit and like watch a TV.
I think this is smart because sometimes I do force myself if I'm having a very short trip, like actually I'm going to the Bahamas for a baby moon in a couple days, and my husband and I are taking a 6 a.m. flight. We're doing exactly what you're telling me not to do and what I know I shouldn't do. And we were like, oh, but it'll be so nice to get there at noon and have the whole day. And I think sometimes it is worth it, but you have to know yourself and you have to know whether it's worth paying that price. The answer is not always yes. And I think we put ourselves in that place too often.
See, I'm not a night owl, so I would take a 6 a.m. flight versus a red eye because I'd rather get up early than sleep on a plane. So that's listening to yourself. You do have, I loved one of the stories you wrote from your year traveling around the world. You said you do have a superpower, and it's to sleep anywhere. So I want to learn. Teach me to sleep anywhere. What am I doing wrong?
I don't know. I mean, I do think that there is some element of it being a superpower where it's just like how I've always been. I think that maybe you have to grow up as like an only kid around adults a lot. And that like, so, I mean, that's basically, I think what it was that I was an only kid. I grew up around adults all the time. I was often having to be like out and about on their schedules, and I just had to like sit on a wine crate and read while they did wine tastings, or like or fall asleep somewhere, and like I've seen it work for other only kids. In terms of just being able to fall asleep anywhere, it's just like be tired. I don't know. I mean, I think if you don't have that ability, bring earplugs, have earbuds, have an eye mask, drink all the wine, put like, I think those hoodies where I don't really like eye masks. I don't really like the thing over your eye, but if you have like a hoodie or something that can actually cover your whole sort of like down to your nose, I think that that's like a much better, and it somehow like kind of cozy, like being a baby and swaddled.
I think that's such a good tip. I'm going to reach it. Give her a point. Because I have a great hoodie from Aviator, which is a travel brand.
Yeah.
And one of the things it's designed to do is actually hang much lower over your head if you raise it up.
What's the brand?
Aviator USA.
Mark!
Thank you. I'm actually wearing Aviator USA jeans because I'm flying, and they have extra pockets, and they're very stretchy, so they feel like
I've not
pajamas.
Heard of this brand. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, very travel friendly. I like
actually,
this.
And snowboard brands are actually really good for hoodies with huge hoods.
What did you pack into?
Well, I packed into, I had a carry-on size, like a large carry-on size suitcase, and about a 40-liter backpack, and I was carrying like a lot of gear, and if I could have, I would have packed lighter.
But I mean, you were on the road for a year, so.
Yeah, and with like no ability to send things home or like get things sent to me, because it's just, once you're on the road like that, you just realize you can't get things sent to you.
I will say, my friend Seb, who has just taken over Jada's role for this year, was talking about how whether he was going to check a bag, and everyone said, no, you mustn't check a bag. And he said, well, I've got to. And it got lost on his first flight.
But Seb and I talked about this, and I was fully in favor of him checking a bag, because he was going from Puerto Rico, Panama, Houston to ice caves in Ontario that were 40 degrees below. And he thought he packed correctly, and he still had to borrow clothes from all these people because he just like didn't have enough stuff.
Well, how could you prepare for that combination of things? But you ended up checking a bag in the end too, right? Because I feel like I just read that you ended up carrying a big thing of conditioner with you.
I checked my carry-on size bag as often as possible.
Interesting.
I don't like carrying a bag through an airport.
Did you lose your case? How often did your case go astray?
Maybe twice.
I think people worry about checking partly because they pack too precious things. So if you have clothes that you can't bear to lose, don't travel with them. Obviously, carry your laptop with you. But, you know, if you're checking a bag, as long as it's full of stuff that, frankly, it's not your grandmother's wedding dress.
Guys, I'm like having a little bit like palpitations thinking about all of this, because really it's making me realize that I'm a very impatient human being, because I don't want to waste any of my vacation time. And I especially don't want to waste it waiting at the baggage carousel. That to me is like the ultimate, just the ultimate annoyance.
Well, I was sort of thinking about what you said about your vacation that you're taking, and that you're going to arrive and you're going to have noon and you're going to have the whole day. And it's nice to be in a warm place from noon until the evening. But my rhythm, as we talk about like doing rhythms, was I would get to a place and I would do nothing the whole day. And like that, I just,
how
like
amazing.
I felt like
that sounds like a luxury. Actually,
you should just choose that day to be a travel day. And like a travel day is just only for travel, and don't try to. But and the one thing you can do for yourself is like set a dinner reservation, set a show reservation, set something where you feel like you haven't wasted the day, but it's just at night, and it's something that you've scheduled.
You must have flown like 30 airlines at least over the course of your travels.
Probably.
I'm just guessing. I'm making up numbers. But were there any standouts? Were there any that actually do serve good food? Like, what were your surprises in terms of airlines?
Well, the number one thing I always do is I just order the Hindu vegetarian meal.
Why is that?
Because I don't really like eating meat that much, but I feel like it's less of a crapshoot that the Hindu or Asian vegetarian meal is almost always decent. So so I always
really?
Do. Yeah.
That's amazing. I know that you can order a remarkable array of different kinds of in-flight meal. I think people assume there's just kosher meals, vegetarian meals, regular meals. There are lots of specificity. But an airline person once said to me, remember, if you pre-order a meal, you can't ever get upgraded because that meal anchors you to your cabin.
Oh, really? Okay, well,
that's interesting. I haven't heard that.
I have never flown anything higher than economy plus. So
well, and I will say,
and your meal is why.
I will say also, if you pre-order the meal, you get it first. And if you're on a flight where you want to go to sleep, getting your meal first can be really valuable.
I think you get a point for that.
Thank
I think we
you.
Say a meal, so we could say pre-order your meal if you want to sleep, but you're not worried about your upgrade.
Fair enough. But I guess...
Will you give me that?
I'm just, yes. It gives yeah, you I think that, part, I think
you
that that's
part
a great...
with the meal. I'll go hungry and sit in business.
No, they won't move you. That if you're a pre-ordered meal, you're one of the people they don't even consider because they can't trot into business with your gampy little economy tray.
See, Mark, here we go. This is why they pay you the big bucks, right?
That's why they pay us. Jada, I'm amazed. You traveled every 4 to 7 days you moved. Mm-hmm. So you really were on the go nonstop. And as a former tour guide, I've been there, so I understand. You have incredible washing your clothes in the bathroom sink tricks that I've never heard. Tell everybody about.
Really? You've never heard them? I mean, well, basically, I think that you should wash your clothes as soon as you get to the hotel room. That's like a really important thing because some things take longer to dry than other things. Socks in particular, socks and anything cotton.
Why? Like, why is that? I've never understood.
I don't
You're
know.
Right, but like, I don't get it.
It always takes your socks at least 2 to 3 days to dry. So just make sure you're doing that right away. And your underwear will take a day. I would wash them. I would use whatever was available, whether it was like shampoo or like hand soap or body wash. And, The real key to making them dry well is that you wrap them up in a towel and then you step on the towel and then you twist it so that you get like the maximum wringing out of these clothes.
Oh my God.
And I mean, this is not assuming you're a luxury traveler, that like it's just like you're a regular traveler and then you hang them up anywhere.
So walk us through this. So you've got like all of your clothing wrapped up essentially in a towel that you twist up into a like a donut roll, and then
well, if you step on it, then you can just wring it really hard. You twist all the way up to the other end.
Got it.
See,
yeah.
I feel like you are the yin to Curtis Stone's yang. If you haven't heard our episode with Curtis Stone yet, Curtis travels only with dirty clothes and then sends them to the hotel laundry to arrive freshly pressed in his closet.
Oh my God.
I'm too tight-fisted to pay for hotel laundry, so I'm much more like Team Jada on this. And I've washed clothes in even the fanciest hotels. I don't think you have to be a budget traveler to think, you know what, I'm really not going to pay $8 to have my pants washed.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. I would not pay for hotel laundry unless you have actually calculated up the cost, because you'll just, I wound up with like $100 laundry bill in China. Like that, and it seemed like it wasn't going to cost that much, but you're not paying attention to all the little tiny things that add up with hotel laundry. My favorite trick, if I like really needed to get something washed, was that I would just find the nearest laundromat and take it.
Yeah,
there.
Of course. Yeah. Brilliant. I think that's so smart. I always pack shout wipes in case something spills.
That's a good. I would also, I really love this chemical thing called Dryel, which is...
Do tell.
It's stuff that you spray on dry clean clothes that keeps you from having to dry clean them all the time. It takes out like when you have that suit that, you know, it kind of just smelly in the armpits or whatever, and you just like don't have time to take it to the dry cleaner and you need to wear it. Like you just spray it in the armpit and it like gives this fresh scent.
Dryel.
I was going to say, I want to buy that now. But I think that's a great tip, because I think we all want to minimize what we're packing when we travel, and we want to rewear things, but we feel a bit self-conscious. And the idea you could spritz it and make it reassure yourself that no one is not going to want to sit next to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a travel size Febreze for that reason. Yeah.
Febreze is good too.
It's good. Jada, your background before 52 Places had you, you know, doing very, very social things all the time. You had really great skills in terms of just chatting up strangers and reporting on social scenes and culture scenes and all of that. And I'm so curious how that affected your ability to kind of make friends on the road and what you can tell people in terms of how you make friends with strangers on the road.
Well, maybe my red carpet buddy over here would have some answers for that.
Jada's looking at me because we used to work the red carpets together. Do you know, the best advice I was ever given about how to strike up a conversation is to ask someone to take your photograph.
Oh, Martha, I was real generous with the dings today.
Yeah, or you say, do you want me to take your photograph? Yeah, it's like one of the two.
It isn't a creepy thing. It's not a chat-up line. It's really a conversation starter, and because it doesn't involve complimenting anything about the person. And it's a very natural thing in a destination. If you see someone on their own, you're like, hey, do you want me to take your picture? Because I'd love it if you could take mine. Perfect opener. How did you get here?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I made many friends that way.
I
love that. Dana, one of my favorite stories from your trip around the world was when you went to Peninsula Papagayo in Costa Rica and managed to live a champagne life on a beer budget. Tell everyone how you hacked the Four Seasons there to experience it without paying $1,500 a night.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of the hotel was as much as my rent in New York, at least. And I had this assignment to go cover Peninsula Papagayo, but like the Times definitely wasn't going to pay for me to stay at the Four Seasons. So I looked up for Airbnbs anywhere close. And because it's just this isolated peninsula, it's known for exclusivity. There wasn't much, but I found a yacht Airbnb. And I just stayed.
Amazing.
And it wasn't like a fancy, fancy yacht, but it was a yacht in a marina in Marina Papagayo, which is actually about a 10-minute walk from the Andaz. So you could walk. So basically, I stayed on this yacht for somewhere around $250 a night. And then I struck up a deal with the owner to eliminate the Airbnb fees. So I just paid him directly and then was paying even less per night. And I also found out that marina has a hotel that is around $150. And what I would do I would make lunch and dinner reservations at the various resort places, like the Four Seasons. And then there were several other luxury resorts within that complex. And I would just go there. And then also the Andaz, you could walk through like this sort of like desert brush along the beach and then get up there. And I was up there and I would just use their free Wi-Fi and eat food.
So basically you hacked Airbnb to stay on a yacht and then eat all of your meals at the $1,500 a night Four Seasons and the slightly less expensive but still very nice Andaz. And you lived life.
But I think you're making a really good point that one of the ways, if you've ever wanted to experience a really luxury hotel,
yeah,
Lunch is a great way because you can often end up by the pool after lunch.
Because
you've bought lunch. So you basically turn it into a day. You buy another glass of wine, sit by the pool. You've basically bought a pool pass added into your lunch.
100%.
100%.
Something that us travel reporters, I think, do a lot. Maybe sometimes too often. But it really does work.
And the nice part was that I stayed there too late, and apparently there were like monkeys on the path back. And so the hotel was like, you know what, we'll just use one of our guys and they'll drive you home.
Oh my God, amazing. You even got chauffeured. So, okay, last question, Jada. You hit 52 places in 52 weeks.
Yeah.
That is more miles than probably any itinerant business traveler that's listening. Totally unfathomable. What were the standouts? How do you choose favorite children? I know, but please do.
Well, I would say that in South America, my standouts were, I loved Bogota, Colombia. I think it's a really beautiful, wonderful city.
Me too. That's one of my favorite overlooked places. And I'm so glad you said
My entire Colombian family is going to be so happy to hear this.
Yeah, I love La Paz, Bolivia, both because it's incredible. It's you can see the whole city for about $10 in cable car fees. And it's really close to the salt flats of Uyuni, which are just like a marvelous freak of nature that you should go to see. In Asia, I really love the Cambodian coast, and I loved Gansu, China, which was really far west and has just all this Buddhist cave history and Great Wall relics that I saw. I was on the Great Wall and there were maybe five other people.
Wow.
So all my shots are just like empty Great Wall shots. So
you get a tip for that. You get a point for that.
My finger was already on the bell mark.
Oh, and then I loved everywhere I went in Africa, but Sao Tome and Principe is a really very special. Have you been there?
No, I'm going there later this year, so I'm very excited.
Are you going to Principe?
I'm going to both,
I think. Okay, great.
For a story.
Oh, lucky you.
But I'm very excited, so thank you. Jada's basically scared. You're kind of giving a thumbs up to all the things I want to do, so thank you.
Oh, good. Well, it sounds like we have the same taste.
But I will say thank you so much for joining us, Jada. That was so kind. One question. Where are you going next as you leave us? Are you traveling at all? Or
I do have a ski vacation planned for St. Anton, but I haven't booked it. Yeah, I mean, it's happening in like the next few days.
Well, the snow is meant to be fantastic, so go, go, go.
Yeah. So that's what I'm doing next.
Well, travel safe, and thank you for joining.
Thank you.
So how did Jada score, Nick? I think she did pretty well, right?
Jada did exceptionally. She got 7 points, although this was also a group effort, right? But here's the recap. One, know thyself. Don't always rush onto the early flight and into your destination. Two, hoodies, not eye masks, especially if you've got an Aviator USA brand hoodie, which is Mark's go-to. Three is designate your travel days so that you just avoid stress and cut your losses. Four, order the Hindu meal in flight. And my add-on to that is order any meal ahead of time, a specialty meal, and you'll be able to get to sleep faster than everyone else. Five, pack Dryel. You'll smell good. Six, strike up conversation with locals by asking them to take your photo or vice versa. It's the easiest way to make friends on the road. And seven, if you want a clear shot of the Great Wall of China, head to Gansu.
Well done, Jada.
Thanks for listening to Travel Genius. I'm Nikki Eckstein.
And I'm Mark Elwood. Do you have a favorite travel tip or hack? Or do you have thoughts on one of the tips we discussed today? Please let us know.
You can call us at 646-324-3490. And maybe we'll even play your tip on the show. You can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Nikki Eckstein with 3 Ks and no Cs.
And I'm at Mark J. Elwood with a K and 2 Ls. And remember, that's 646-324-3490. 3490. And if you are a fan of Travel Genius, I hope you are, please take a moment to rate and review us. It really helps new listeners find us.
This episode was produced by Topher Forges. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. Thanks for listening.